Everybody, Sarah here, back again. Today's episode, Hail King or Queen. We are an equal opportunity podcast here, Amazon. And that's what the show is going to be about for today. Why Amazon is most likely, in my view and the view of many others, going to be the next big player in wealth management. And so thrilled, I've got one of the industry's best, Rick Edelman. Hey, Rick.
Sarah, great to be with you. Thanks.
Rick is the founder and executive chairman, and you all know this, I know, of Edelman Financial Services. And Rick's going to weigh in on maybe Amazon, maybe the role of technology in financial advice. But by the way, Rick, I've heard that you have a very snazzy sock collection. Is this true?
Yes. Yes, it is.
How did this originate? Because, you know, I write sometimes about fashion and financial advisors. Some people don't always like what I write, I'll admit, but I do write about it and a lot of people read this. So, I mean, I'm curious to hear, how did this go over when you instigated these stylish socks?
Well, you know, naturally it catches somebody's eye and people usually look askance at crazy colorful socks. I did it because, frankly, I'm really jealous of women. I mean, you know, women, you get to wear so many different colors. You get to wear so many different styles. You can change your hairdo. You can change the length of your hair. You can change the color of your hair. You can change your makeup all the time, your lipstick, your nail polish. You can wear all kinds of jewelry. Everything is just so flexible for women. And men, we get to wear blue. I mean, we just have... And we get a watch. And now with Apple Watches, even that's taken away from us. So we don't get any opportunity to be playful or creative at all with our wardrobe. And wearing black socks all the time, dark blue, brown, I mean, it's just dull and boring. So I started wearing crazy colorful socks about 10 years ago. And it's fun. And it just makes things fun. And then about... 5-6 years ago, the New York Times wrote a big story in the Sunday section on how crazy socks are now all the norm. And, you know, it's a big, huge thing in New York. And they didn't give me any credit at all for this, even though I'm the first person I know of who did this. And so I got annoyed. I was like, well, if the New York Times is telling everybody to do it, then I'm no longer the trendsetter. What can I do to once again be ahead of the trend? So I decided to start wearing different socks. Instead of matching the socks, they were now different, which is totally bizarre. But I'll tell you what, it makes it so easy to get dressed in the morning because you don't have to give any thought to what you're wearing. And if you lose a sock in the washing machine, so what? The other one is still perfectly fine. So it's an awful lot of fun, and it's a trademark.
Right. Wow. Great story. But you know, the way that you dress and your fashion and your style are kind of like part of your brand, right?
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, it's not enough that you are a talented financial advisor who offers great advice in the client's best interest. I mean, that's kind of a given, right? If you're going to be a successful financial advisor, you also have to have a personality that makes people like you and draws people to you, and people enjoy being around you. And so recognizing that there's more to life than money, as my wife Jean likes to say, personal finance is more personal than finance. And we need to help people recognize that this subject doesn't have to be dull and boring and stodgy and lifeless. Life is short. We should have some fun.
Exactly. And that's kind of what today's episode is about. And what I think, for example, Amazon has done very well is that they've personalized the experience of buying online so well. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. But first, I'm going to just tell a story from my life, and it's going to illustrate this point, right? So I recently had my fourth baby, and so now this is 4 kids under 5 years old for those of you that have been following me, and you'll probably be hearing from her soon because she's, you know, sleeping in my arms as I record this podcast. Yes, I do it all, by the way. I have an S on my chest. I have a superwoman costume that I wear, not just on Halloween. Seeing that I had a new baby, I had to move each car on the train up one, so to speak. So my one-year-old, who was in a crib, had to get into my three-year-old's toddler bed. My three-year-old got the four-year-old's bed. And now what am I going to do with my four-year-old, right? So She had recently gotten some stars on her star chart for good behavior at school, so I was on the hook for getting her a Disney Queen Elsa bed. Now, the last toddler bed I bought was Thomas the Train, and I got it off Craigslist. And this was nothing short of a fiasco. I had to wait for a weekend when my dad was here with the car, because, you know, in New York City, we don't have any cars. We had to risk our lives driving to a bad area of New York City to pick it up. Turns out the guy forgot to give us a major part of the bed. We have to go back now, drop it off at Antonio's mother's house in Spanish Harlem. It was like, I'm done with Craigslist after this, and so wasn't everybody in my family. And I always thought, for some reason, that it would be more expensive to buy things off of Amazon, and which was why I was always resorting to these other means, right? But I was surprised when I looked and I found that it was kind of on sale, I'm going to give you that, but it was actually just a little bit less than what people were selling the Queen Elsa toddler bed for on Craigslist. And plus, you know, remember, I have no option now because everyone in my family is a little bit angry at me over these like bed fiascos and I need the bed right away, et cetera, right? Well, to say that this was effortless was an understatement. The bed got there on time. There was no hassle. All the parts were there. I didn't have to leave my home, right? So this begs the question. This was the ultimate customer experience, okay? Why doesn't Amazon get into even higher margin businesses with a recurring revenue stream like finance? I think they could kill it there, right? And I wrote an article about this. I'm going to link it below. And I have my personal opinions on why that I'll go over. But Rick, what do you think about all this? What do you think about an Amazon-like customer experience in finance? Do you think that's really what retirees want? Or is the technology going to be too much for them? What do you think?
Well, I think it's kind of none of the above, Sarah. I think that consumers don't love Amazon. What consumers love is convenience, good service, good price, and consistency. And if Amazon happens to deliver those, then they're fans of Amazon. If you didn't get that experience from Craigslist, then you're not a fan of Craigslist. But if those experiences were reversed, and let's face it, there are people who have bad experiences at Amazon and good experiences at Craigslist. If everybody was always terrible, that they wouldn't exist. So it's not that there's a particular loyalty. It's always in the category of what have you done for me lately. Mm-hmm. So we have to recognize that Amazon is a really easy company to like because they are highly consistent and they do provide a lot of convenience at acceptable market prices. So I'm a fan of Amazon as a customer as well. As an investor, the stocks never really made a whole lot of sense to me. The company pretty much loses money except for its cloud services. When you say that Amazon could get into the financial services business and really improve its margins dramatically, I'm not so sure if that's true. Mm-hmm. I suspect that there are probably other aspects of Amazon's business where the margins are dramatically higher than what they could obtain in the financial services industry, and they would be subjecting themselves to massive amounts of regulation that they currently avoid. If they try to get into the banking business, the credit card business, the insurance business, or the investment management or brokerage businesses, my goodness gracious, I'm not so sure that Jeff Bezos would really tolerate the oversight that he would suddenly find himself under from the SEC and other regulators.
I hear you on that. Regulation is the thorn in everybody's side. Maybe he should just stick to the dental floss and toddler beds, right?
Well, I think as a consumer, we would all love the idea for Amazon to come in and champion businesses that we all love to hate. I mean, I don't think anybody particularly enjoys the experience of buying insurance, whether it's health insurance, life insurance, or auto insurance, or any other kind. And I have to bet that Amazon or Google or Apple or, you know, name your tech company here, fill in the blank, I gotta believe that these folks would be able to dramatically improve the experience and probably along the way provide economies of scale that have not been available to us to date. So I think most of us would welcome the idea of tech companies getting in these businesses. And it's an interesting question, the fact that they haven't done it yet.
Right. I personally would love somebody to come in and revamp the healthcare industry. I mean, as you can imagine, with four kids under 5 years old, and now I've been through four pregnancies, like I'm so tired of healthcare, you know what I'm saying? Like if I had the option to never go to the doctor again or never get a prescription for the rest of my life or anybody else's life, then I, like I would just take it 100%. I wish someone would fix this. Anyways, but when you say convenience, right, you said, I like what you said. You said they don't like Amazon as much as they just like the idea of having convenience, good service, and good price. So let me ask you about this. Convenience. Do you think that financial advisors could use technology to make things easier for their clients, even the boomers who may not be perceived as that tech savvy?
Sure. And we're doing it already. We're doing online signatures, electronic signatures. We're providing meetings via video chat and online texting, online chat. We're doing all kinds of improvements compared to what we did a decade ago or 20 years ago that make things faster, easier, cheaper for our clients. We now provide 24/7 access to account information that in the past was never available. So there are a lot of improvements and enhancements that we've made along the way, and there will be more to come over time. Are we as easy to work with as Amazon or Netflix? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But we're in a whole lot more complicated business than them, and we're in a whole lot more important business, frankly. I mean, if Netflix craps out on you, you didn't get to watch your movie tonight. But if something goes wrong with your financial advisory situation, you could have your life savings wiped out. So the stakes are so much higher, and that's why the regulators are so much slower to saying okay to some of the technological innovations that are otherwise available.
Right. But see, here's the thing. I'm not even talking about account access as much as I work with financial advisors that, like, they don't know how to use track changes or they don't want to. You know what track changes is in Microsoft
Word. Yes.
Forgive me if I'm
yes.
Okay, fine. I get these scans where people print out my, like, if I write copy for somebody's website, I'll send them a draft in Word. They print out the file, handwrite the changes, and I can't even read their handwriting. And then they scan it, and then they got to email it back to me. I'm like, is this 1979, y'all? Like, why can't we just use, or they, you know what else? They send me checks in the mail, right? And no offense to anyone and my clients listening to this, but I mean, do you really think I want to go to the bank with like four kids, you know, to deposit like your check, you know?
Well, is that really your fault or their fault? I mean, if they want to use a manual process of mailing you a check, that doesn't obligate you to traipse off to the bank to deposit it. You can just take a photograph of your check and upload it to your bank instantaneously. So there are ways that we can mitigate the Luddite tendencies of those we're interacting with to some degree. But you're right. It's a lack of training. It's a lack of awareness, a lack of understanding, and often an unwillingness to change. A lot of people are still using Yahoo accounts instead of having converted to Gmail because it's a nuisance to change your email. A lot of folks are using the very same bank they've been using for 20 years. They have the very same auto insurance policy they've had for 20 years. Without ever shopping around to see if there's something new and different. Inertia takes over, the crisis of crush of life and daily activities. I mean, can you imagine you deciding to change your internet provider in the midst of raising these four kids? You've got priorities and you have to sort through them. And so the financial advisor has the obligation to helping the client do things faster, easier, simpler, cheaper, so that the client doesn't have to spend any time dealing with it. In other words, I would criticize Microsoft for making the use of track changes so difficult and cumbersome more than I would criticize the user for not understanding how to take advantage of the technology.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which then comes back to the question of what really is the user experience that people are having when using this technology?
And I'll take it a step further. What is it that the client is paying for? We often discover when we deal with practice management issues, and in our firm, you know, at Edelman Financial Engines, we have 360 financial advisors in nearly 200 offices around the country. And practice management is a huge focus for us because we want to make sure that our advisors are spending virtually all of their time with their clients, not spending their time with technology or back office or compliance or trading or operations or paperwork, because that's not what the clients are paying for. Clients are paying for the advice, just like with your doctor. You don't want your doctor spending all of his or her time dealing with Medicare. You want your doctor providing treatment to you, analyzing your health care, figuring out what the latest technological or medical solution is for your situation, and that's what you pay them for. So we need to make sure that the advisors are spending as much of their time as possible with ease of their practice, unburdening the advisor from the challenges and the chores so that they aren't distracted from the client. A survey came out recently that said that advisors, Michael Kitchis did this, said that financial advisors are spending only 20% of their time with their clients. That's obscene. And we would never tolerate that in our practice. And I find it hard to believe that any client would be tolerant of it if they realized that's what was happening with the advisor they were hiring.
So how do you make it easier for advisors to devote more time? Does it have to do with technology only, or are there other things?
There are two major aspects. One is technology, being able to provide the tools to an advisor that allows them to work faster, cheaper, easier. For example, every financial advisor in the country has a photocopier. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? But back in the 1980s, that wasn't the case. Photocopiers were brand new, they were very expensive, and they were cumbersome and difficult to work with, often breaking down, and it was not easier than using a mimeograph machine or using carbon copies in a typewriter. Today, photocopiers are like oxygen.
Yeah.
And so we need to make sure that the advisor has the latest and greatest technology that in fact makes life simple and easy. But technology is only part of the equation. The other major part, I think the majority of the issue, is HR. The advisor needs the support staff to alleviate the advisor from having to spend time with the photocopier. In other words, you don't expect your physician to fill out Medicare forms. There's personnel in that medical practice to do that on behalf of the physician so that your doctor can spend time with you. And it's the same thing in a financial planning practice. You don't want your financial advisor fussing with paperwork. That's not an appropriate use of the advisor's time. And considering the amount of money that the advisor makes relative to other back office staff, it's an inefficient use of the advisor's time economically. So we need to make sure that we are providing the advisors with the support staff that they need. In our organization, we have 1,500 employees, only 360 advisors. In other words, the ratio is nearly 4-1 in our firm. One advisor versus three support staff. That's not what you typically find in most organizations, and that's why our advisors are able to work much more efficiently, much more effectively for the benefit of their clients. So yeah, technology matters, but it's not just about technology. It's also trained, talented, dedicated staff who are equally important as a member of the team serving the clients.
So what is the result in your practice of this higher focus on the needs of the customer?
Well, the result is a better client experience.
Right.
We're able to serve the client in ways that exceed the client's expectations. And as a result, our client retention rate is extraordinarily high. Our client retention rate is 97-98%. Clients, once they join us, pretty much never leave because they're very happy with the service they're getting, the quality of the advice they're getting. They're very satisfied with the experience that they have in working with us. And it's because our focus is so intent on the client that whatever the client needs, we're determined to provide it. Even if the client doesn't know they need it, that's our job, is to figure out on behalf of the client, what is it that they need, and then deliver it to them in a very effective way. And that's really the total focus of our organization. So we make massive investments in technology, huge investments in the infrastructure of our organization to be able to deliver that client experience to the client that they're wanting and that we are committed to providing.
Do you get more referrals as a result?
Probably most of our business, most of our new clients come from referrals from other clients. I think that's true for most financial advisors as well. You know, everything I just said, I don't think is necessarily unique to our firm. I think if you look at most successful financial advisors, they're making investments in technology and in employees. And they're getting most of their new business from existing clients who are happy to refer their friends and family and colleagues to the firm. Because just as you love to tell people to go to a movie that you just loved or to go to your favorite restaurant, you're happy to tell friends and family to go to a financial advisor you really enjoy. Again, it's going back to Amazon. If you have someone who is providing a consistent experience that you're satisfied with, you're happy to spread the word. And so we're beneficiaries of that. And we're very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. So take me back to how it got this way. Did you always run your practice this way, or was there some kind of a process through which you realized that this was the better way to go?
No, this was always this way. Back in the 1980s, one of the early trade magazines named me one of the most technologically advanced advisors in the country. I was the first of those that I knew using a PC back when you were dealing with floppy disk drives. I've always recognized the ability to automate and the efficiencies that you develop in the course of doing so. So we have always devoted substantial attention and corresponding funding to technology. It's really a vital element of our practice, always has been.
Uh-huh.
Oh, your daughter's waking up.
I know. Sorry about that. Jeez. She didn't read the employee manual, I don't think, because she can't read that. In fact, none of my kids can read. They're all too young. Sorry about that, Rick. Anyways, okay. So, but why doesn't everybody do it this way?
I think there is one primary reason, and that's money. When you make investments in technology, it's expensive. In fact, when I go back to the very first business plan that I wrote when my wife and I started our practice in 1986, I calculated how much money we were going to spend in all the different areas of operating the business, rent and advertising, the cost of business cards, that kind of thing. And I had a line item for how much it was going to cost me to buy a computer and a telephone. And I pretty much nailed all the expenses. All the expenses that I projected proved to be true, with only one exception. It didn't occur to me in the 1980s that I was going to have to replace the computer before it broke. Because computer technology was continuing to grow thanks to Moore's Law. And in 2 years, the new generation of computers were twice as fast as the machine I had. Mm-hmm. And even though my machine was still working, it was now incredibly slow compared to the new products. And so it didn't occur to me how much money I'd end up spending to maintain our technological advantage. Mm-hmm. And many financial advisors, I think, are intimidated by the cost of technology and the challenge of remaining educated and knowledgeable about how to use the technology. You talk about people who don't even know how to use track changes in a Word document. Studies have shown that the number one use of Microsoft Excel is the addition button. 90% of users, that's the only thing they ever use it for. They never use it for the other formulas and calculation capabilities of the software. So it's while someone's trying to build their business, it can sometimes be difficult to devote the attention and energy necessary to remain knowledgeable, state-of-the-art, cutting-edge with technology.
But is it all changing now that the technology specialists have come to the market with robo-advisors and all kinds of new solutions that are very advanced technologically? Is this the turning point? Is this changing the game for the industry? Or do you think technology will just be technology? There has to still be this human component and that will never die?
Well, we're undergoing a substantial evolutionary period in the financial services field. Keep in mind that here at Edelman Financial Engines, we are the first robo-advisor. Financial Engines, who we merged with last summer, was founded over 20 years ago, not only the first robo-advisor, but still today the largest, with $170 billion in assets under management. And so we have long recognized that there used to be this notion that you're either a robo or you're brick and mortar human advisor, and it's morphing. And we're the proof of that. We are very high touch at Edelman, and Engines is very high tech. And what we're now recognizing is that you can't be one or the other. You must be both. And this is what the newer robos like Wealthfront and Betterment and some of the others are discovering. They're adding human advisors because they're recognizing that their customers want more than you can get from an online algorithm. They want to be able to talk to a human. They need questions answered that the software isn't able to provide. And so the notion of robo is nothing more than today's version of a photocopier. Whereas advisors are saying, oh, I don't know if I need one of those, they're beginning to recognize it's now a vital, inherent part of an effective financial planning practice. And to suggest that I'm in competition with them or that's only for others is foolish as it would be having a practice without a photocopier.
Right. They call it the technology-enabled advisor, right? That's kind of a hybrid model now that people are pursuing because you really can't have it either. You can't have it exclusively either way. You can't be all brick and mortar and you can't be all robo because they did that and then they found out when the market crashed, a few of them, I'm not going to name names, but we know which robo advisors had to shut down the whole operation and stop trading. And the market hasn't really, we've been in a bull market for 10 years or something like that. We haven't had the reckoning day yet.
Well, clearly the original business models of many of these robos was unsustainable. The notion that you could charge 15 or 25 basis points and provide no money for human advisors, no money for marketing, was a flawed business model. And many of these organizations were surviving only because of the infusion of venture capital that they were receiving, that they're spending more money on a monthly basis than they're earning in revenues. And when their VC dries up, they'll be out of business. And that's why many of them are either out of business, as you said, or they're pivoting to broaden their services that will include the use of human advisors, and their fee schedules are changing along the way as well. In other words, we're seeing the morphing. Those that are purely robo are now adding humans, and those that are pure humans are now adding technology and robo services. In the future, they'll be indistinguishable. Everybody will be offering everything because it's the only way to survive. And it's not just in the financial services industry you're seeing that. Look at Amazon. They're opening stores. You now have bookstores by Amazon. Amazon is now owning grocery stores. We're seeing online retailers opening brick and mortar retail locations, just as brick and mortar retail are now opening online sites. So the notion that we do it this way and they do it that way is old and obsolete. It's not a sustainable business model. Everybody has to do everything in order to deliver to the client what the client wants, which is a consistent, good experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rick. So listen, it looks like we've used up our half hour allocation here, to use a financial word, allocation. Now, I thank you so much for your insight. And I think that the advisors around the world who are listening to this are really going to benefit from hearing the great wisdom that you've imparted here. Could you please just summarize the three things about technology that if you could say to advisors three things, you know, what would it be about technology?
Technology is here to stay. It's going to radically change how you do your business. It's going to change what you personally focus on. It requires a substantial investment of time and money. And if you don't want to make those investments personally or within your practice, you need to join a firm that is doing that on your behalf. In other words, you don't have to become a doctor in your own medical practice, you can go become a doctor at a hospital so that the hospital does all the infrastructure and you just be a doctor and serve patients. Same thing as a financial advisor. Either run your practice the right way using the technology correctly or join another practice where they're doing it on your behalf.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like, because we didn't exactly cover that, but I like that because, well, I think essentially what you're saying is join the movement or join the movement, right? However you do it, because you can't, I mean, essentially what you're saying is you really can't compete with technology.
Yes, and so we need to recognize that the way you've been building your practice for the past 20 years is not the way you're going to be able to continue operating your practice for the next 20 years.
Right. All right, Rick. Well, listen, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Everybody who's listening to this, please subscribe, rate, and review the show, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.